This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 198.
I don't know. I just realized I wanted people coming to me
to pay
me versus me trying to go get money from somebody else. So that was the epiphany.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everybody? This is Josh Dorkin, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. Brandon Turner. What's up, man?
No, not much. How you doing?
I'm okay.
You're okay. Yeah, you've had a fun. Why are we live in Josh's living room right now?
I'm breathing.
You're alive. Yeah. So yeah,
Bruce Baba.
Good. What's been going on in your life? Because I you have a fun story to tell. I don't know if fun's
Yeah, fun would be the antithesis of the story. But
I think it's fun being 2,000 miles away. It makes me laugh. But
yeah, well, you know, so last week we're having a great week at work and doing our thing and receive a phone call at around 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday telling us that we have to evacuate the building immediately due to a health and safety issue. And I was befuddled. I thought it was a practical joke. I said, surely you jest, actually. I said lots of swear words. I was like, no.
You swearing? No.
Yes. And anyway, we were told to evacuate due to a health and safety issue from our landlord. And so we did. And they've been renovating our building. And turns out in so doing, they came across some asbestos in another unit. Well, downstairs, you know. And so we had to vacate and we have no office right now. We are homeless. We found a temporary space. Today's Tuesday. That was Friday. So it's been a crazy few days. I have been very busy and suffice to say, this has been a bit of a challenge, but here we are recording the Bigger Pockets Podcast. Of course, we are here in Denver. We found a co-work space, I believe, that we'll be working out of until this whole situation could be sorted, but you got to be nimble, got to be able to transition your business when things come up. And that's exactly what we've done. And, you know, we're up and going. So it's been a crazy 3 days. It feels like it's been a month.
Well, I'm glad you're okay.
Yeah. Sorry for the long-winded intro, but yeah, it's a crazy situation.
Yeah. Sounds like fun.
Thank you, Brandon. Well,
speaking of crazy situations, let's get to today's quick.
Tip.
You didn't see that coming because I didn't tell you the crazy situation. No, this is a quick tip just from a story from my own life this week. We had a property that we went and looked at. The owners were asking $159,000 for this property. And we looked at it. We thought there's no way this is worth that. It sat on the market for 6 months, finally came off the market. We offered them 70. And we negotiated and got $77,000 under contract. So my quick tip today is you don't know people's motivation. So don't feel bad about offering. If it's really worth a low amount and that's where it makes sense to you, offer that. Like we ran our numbers and like using the Bigger Pockets rental property calculator. And we ran our numbers. We came up with a number that worked for us. And my max was 80. I said, at 80, I can make a profit with this. No more.
Yeah.
And we offered them 70 and we negotiated 77. And so, yeah, don't feel bad about making lowball offers. You know, I'm not saying be weird about it, but you know.
What do you say to somebody who says, well, isn't that taking advantage of the seller? Isn't that you being a snake, a slime ball? Isn't that you being a terrible person? I mean, could you do such a thing?
Yeah. And I think the answer is, I mean, it sat on the market for 6 months and nobody wanted it at the higher price. Like the market determines what a property is worth and the market determined it was not worth what they were asking. So I offered them the number that made sense for my business and they had the choice to accept it and deny it or reject it and they accepted it because it worked for them. And they didn't actually care about the money. They're trying to retire. There's some health issues. They want to just get done with it. And what actually convinced them at the end, this is just a cool tip. What actually convinced them was we said, and remember, we can close this thing next week. This isn't a 3 month process, 2 month process. We're not going to do a bunch of fancy loan things. Cash next week, done. And lady said, really? Oh, that sounds great. That'd be great to be done with this after 6 months of being on the market.
Yeah. There you go. And I think that's, you know, and this is the longest quick tip ever. I think that's typical. I mean, for somebody who's new, they don't necessarily realize that people find themselves in particular situations from time to time. Things happen, whether it's these folks who just want to get out, a landlord who's got a property, they're just suffering from, I've been there, right? Yep. Or, you know, somebody going through a divorce or a death in the family. And, you know, for them, they want nothing more than to move on. And so, you know, they have a right to accept it. They could have countered you and said, you know, we'll give it to you for 90 or 100. And you would have said no, and you guys would have parted. But the reason they accepted was it worked for them. You were the guy who came in at the right time, and they just wanted to get the hell out.
Yeah. Yeah. They wanted out quick. So again, go make some offers, guys.
There you go. Make it happen. Right. Cool.
You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short Notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. Connectinvest.com/VP. Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today.
Top real estate investors love to talk about how they save so much on taxes. But how are they able to build rental property empires while skirting Uncle Sam? 1031 exchanges. 1031 exchanges allow you to defer capital gains taxes while you sell an investment property, exchanging your old property for a bigger, better one and avoiding the tax man while you do it. And that's where First American Exchange Company comes in. They're the leaders in 1031 exchanges. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, First American Exchange can help you with simple rental property exchanges, complex commercial real estate investments, reverse exchanges, and more. Don't let your taxes eat into your profits. Visit First American Exchange Company at firstexchange.com or call them at 800-556-2520. That's firstexchange.com or 800-556-2520. Keep your money in your pocket and propel your portfolio further at firstexchange.com. First American Exchange Company does not provide tax or legal advice. Consult your financial, real estate, tax, or legal advisor about your circumstances. First American Exchange Company. Safe, smart, secure.
All right, guys. So this is show 198 of the Bigger Pockets podcast. You can check out the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show198. Before we bring in today's guest, guys, if you have not left us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever else you are listening to this, or if you have not subscribed to the Bigger Pockets podcast, please jump in there and do that. Obviously, subscribing helps you, and leaving us ratings and reviews helps us. So we definitely appreciate that. Let's get to the show. Today's guest, Eric Bolin. Eric is a real estate investor living in Texas, investing in Massachusetts, which is kind of the opposite of what we hear from a lot of people, you know, living in a cheaper market, investing in a more expensive one. We're going to get into that. But the coolest thing, he's built a lifestyle of financial independence at the age of 30, which is great. He owns 26 rental units, and he built it up through the Burr method, which we'll talk about. He's done lots of random strategies in there as well. But good guy, great story, very motivating. So definitely pay attention. There's lots of cool little tips in there. So, let's do this. Let's bring him on. What's going on, Eric? Welcome to the show, man. It's good to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Josh. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. So I met Eric at the Financial Bloggers Conference, FinCon, just a few weeks ago, and I was totally impressed by his story and the things that he's doing, some really kind of unique things. So Eric, I'm excited to dig into that today. So why don't we begin there at the very beginning? How'd you get into this real estate thing? Like, what's your story?
Yeah, so it's actually kind of interesting. I got into real estate by accident, actually. I was in grad school where I met my wife, and we just wanted to buy a home. And around where I went to school, there's only multifamilies, but we wanted to be close to school. So we ended up buying a multifamily house. And that's how I accidentally became a landlord, I guess. And so I had an epiphany. Didn't take very long. Basically, long story short, someone knocked on my door pretty late at night to pay me rent. And I took the rent, sat down, and I'm like, this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life. So I
pay rent at odd hours from strange people in your house. I mean, that's not an epiphany I want. Hey, hey, Josh, you sleeping? Yeah. Hey, I'll pay you some rent.
That's kind of how it happened. Well, I don't know. I just realized I wanted people coming to me to pay me versus me trying to go get money from somebody else. So that was the epiphany, not that it came at 9 o'clock and when I was trying to watch TV with my wife. You know, that wasn't the good part.
That'd be fun, though. I mean, we can have a party, right?
There you go. No, I actually remember that very first time I ever got rent also. Like, my very first rental house was a little duplex. And I remember my mortgage was $620 a month and they paid me $650 in cash. And I was like, holy – it was that same epiphany. Like, this is life-changing stuff, but it's so simple. But it's totally life-changing, and it changed my life just like yours. So very cool.
Hey, Brandon.
Yeah.
Did they come and bang on your door? And
they probably did, actually.
Hand it to you in the house?
Everybody sucks at being a landlord in the beginning, don't we? Like, yes. All three of us, I'm sure, sucked at being landlords in the beginning. But you get better over time.
Well, the problem was I was living in the same building, right? Yeah. So they just walked downstairs, right? So but anyway, so I was in grad school at the time. And then I ended up deploying over to Afghanistan for a year. And then I came back from Afghanistan and I had a lot of money. I had about $100,000 I saved up while I was over there.
Well, wait. So you're in the reserves, right? Is that right?
No, he's in the I get rich while fighting the bad guys army. How do I join that one? Pay $100,000 a year.
I'm an officer in the National Guard, so officers get paid a little bit more than enlisted soldiers. So, so I came back, and then plus we were living for free at home. We didn't, you know, the tenants were paying the mortgage and stuff. So when you put that all together, I had a lot of money.
That's awesome.
Unfortunately, the Army didn't give me the whole $100,000. That would have been great, but so I had about $100,000. And when I came back, you know, everybody after a year overseas is coming back and they're buying nice stuff, cars, partying, and spending all their money. I bought a flip. And I actually dropped out of my grad program at that time and bought a flip. Yeah. And so that's what kind of got me started. And I've just been growing ever since. But yeah, that's how I got started in real estate.
So you're kind of the sucker, right? I mean, you're this guy who, like, you dropped out of grad school. I mean, you spent money on a stupid flip. I mean, like,
you could have a cool car right now. You could have a Tesla.
You could be, yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. I could be working right now for somebody else. Getting paid. Absolutely.
That's awesome. True. All right, so let's walk through that mindset back then. I mean, when you were first, I want to go even before the flip. So back to the house hack. When you decided to buy a multifamily, how many units was it? Did you say three?
Three.
Okay. Units. So you're living in one unit, renting that out, thinking, you know, this is pretty awesome. What made you want to then shift from that over to, I'm going to go buy something to flip? How did that transition go in your head?
I didn't even know what financial independence or any of this stuff was when I first started. Originally, my plan was to sell that, move out of that crappy neighborhood and get a decent house and be a normal person, right? So, you know, that epiphany that night when I got that rent really changed my whole mindset. And then I started researching. That's actually about 2010-11 is when I actually found Bigger Pockets. And I started looking up how to make money doing this or how to do this with real estate. And it just kind of progressed slowly. Especially when I was overseas, that whole year with nothing to do, you know, like, I mean, I was doing what I was doing over there, but on my free time, I had nothing to do but think about what I want to do when I got home. So there's a lot of research going on. And so I spent that time just learning everything I could about real estate.
So is that something that, I guess I'm just kind of thinking about this. You're over there in your downtime while you're not serving and protecting, you know, you're pondering and you know, we've got a lot of people out there across the world in different places that are sitting and pondering when they're not you know, out there putting their lives on the line. Is this something like that people talk about? I mean, are you guys talking about, you know, hey, I'm going to make money when I get back. I'm going to buy fancy cars or kind of what's going on there?
Overseas? What's going on in our...
On the mindset. Yeah, in terms of like, you know, the financial stuff.
Yeah, so absolutely. So it depends on who you talk to and what level they're at and what they want to do in life. But everybody's talking about what they're going to do when they get home. You know, whatever their plans are, it's normal when you're away for so long. I came up with a lot of ideas, different business ideas that I wanted to do. And the real estate thing was in the back of my head the whole time. And that ended up being what won in my mind, just, you know, when I came back. But yeah, it's actually very, there's a lot of anxiety, believe it or not, because you have all these dreams and goals that you want to do, but you can't do any of them. You're just stuck for that period of time. So you're just kind of being anxious about what am I going to do when I get home? Obviously, that's what you talk about.
Yeah.
You have nothing else to talk about. So, yeah.
And for anyone who is overseas, though, there is an opportunity, right, with real estate. I mean, now that you've been doing this, you know, if you have an opportunity to go in before you and get deployed or anything like that and actually pick up some rental properties, I mean, in theory, you could even run a rental business from overseas, right? I mean, there's guys doing that.
Absolutely. I didn't know that then, but you know, now I live in Texas. I run all my properties in Massachusetts. So absolutely, you can do it all from a distance.
Wait, you just said you live in Texas, but you have property in Massachusetts.
Backwards.
That's like opposite of what most people do, right? Because properties I always hear are expensive in the Northeast, but in Texas, properties are cheap. So I heard that right? You didn't mix that up. You live in Texas and you, So we're going to talk into that. But before we get into that, let's go back to the flip. That very first flip. Yeah. Was that a live-in flip or was that like, I'm going to flip this house and fix it up, sell it?
I didn't live in it. I bought it in 2012 and I flipped it over the course of a few months. I had contractors, everything just like your normal flip. It wasn't great. I didn't make a ton of money. I made a few thousand dollars, but the way I like to look at it is if you can go to school and someone pays you to go to school, then that's a success.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way I look at that.
Love that.
Yeah. What do you remember what you paid for it or like what you sold it for? Like what price range was that in?
I bought it for about 110 and I sold it for 210 maybe. But the big thing was there's about a $25,000 or $30,000 septic system that had to go into it. So it ate up a lot of the money. And
did you know that when you bought it?
Yes, I knew about the septic system.
Okay.
But there's a lot of little stuff that popped up. There was some, there's a little bit of insect damage that had to get repaired that we didn't catch up front.
Would that be termites?
I can't remember if it's termites or ants, but it wasn't huge, but it was just like a lot of the little unexpected stuff like that. So actually, one of the big things that cost me a lot of money was the contractor. I didn't vet them out very well on all the things that they were doing. And one of the things that got me was the floors at the end. They didn't do a good job on the floors. It went up on market because I had to travel for something. So it went up on market before I got to actually see the floors. And all the people that were going to bid, I thought would bid high, didn't want anything to do with the property because the floors weren't the condition they needed to be. So even after I redid the floors finally and got it, you know, nice, the people who would have paid top price didn't want to come back to the property. So lesson learned.
Yeah.
How did that end up happening? I mean, was that because you were away or missing out on seeing the end result on the floors? That was right, just because you couldn't see it.
Right. So yeah, that was because I couldn't see it. I trusted them that they could do the floors based off of some work that was done somewhere else.
Yeah.
But I actually went over to China. My wife's Chinese. We were having our Chinese wedding. So just the way the timeline worked out, I was overseas when it went on the market. And so, you know.
Right on. So for somebody who is in the middle of a project that does have to go overseas and has somebody else manning the project, what would they do in a situation like that now that you are more learned and experienced?
Well, now I have another layer in there. So I have somebody who works for me who can go inspect properties and such. So that wouldn't happen now. I just trusted the contract that it was done. Then it went up on the market.
Yep.
You know, now I have somebody who can inspect it and say, hey, you need to fix this before we put it on the market and delay putting it on the market by a few weeks if necessary.
So verify, trust, but verify, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, perfect. One thing you said there about having that extra layer in there, like that is one thing in my life that, I mean, totally changed the last couple, like year or so of my investing, was having that. I never had that layer there. And I'm not that good at dealing with contractors. I don't like confrontation. But as soon as I got that layer there, somebody else to be the bad guy or to yell at people, I tell them what to do, they go tell somebody else what to do. Instantly, my entire business changed. So I just recommend that, yeah, to people out there, like, there's so many good reasons to have that. It doesn't have to be a full-time employee there. It could be a family member. It could be a partner. It could be, you know, somebody working 5 hours a week for you. But just have that person if you need it.
I agree. As soon as I got somebody to yell at Brandon all the time that wasn't me, my life got so much better.
So much better.
It was less fun, but definitely better.
Anyway.
Well, it's true even with tenants, collecting rent or dealing with tenants. When you have somebody else to point out and say, they're saying this, or there's a layer in between you, so I can be the bad guy and they can just relay the news, or however you want to work it.
Yep.
You know, you don't have to feel bad about telling them, pay me, or I'm going to evict you.
Yeah, when you have somebody else being the bad guy, you can make a clear, like, non-emotional, you know, like right now, like I've said this before, but like my mother-in-law answers phones for our company. We hired her very part-time. All she does is answer phones and shows units. But because of that, like, she's always the person talking to the tenant. So I can tell, I don't hear the emotional side of it. She just tells me the facts and I tell her what to do about it. And it works out so good. And definitely a great tip there.
This is how Brandon deals with his mother and monster-in-law.
She's amazing. She is an amazing lady, and she's much better at handling tenants than I am.
Yeah.
And so, and it's not like full time. Like when I was like I couldn't afford a full time person when I didn't have enough units, and so I just found somebody who wanted to work 5 or 10 hours a week. Okay, let's do it. So
hey Eric. So let's go back to this Texas Massachusetts thing. I mean, again, people live in LA, New York, Boston, you know, they say, I can't afford it. And they look for a smaller, less expensive market. You did the opposite. Why?
Well, I lived in Massachusetts. I grew up in Massachusetts, spent my first 29 or 30 years there.
Go Mets.
So, just bought property. I'm just going to ignore that.
Yeah. Anyway,
So I grew up in Massachusetts. I spent my first 29 or 30 years there. And so I just bought properties that made sense for me at the time that I can manage directly. And then I moved to Texas a couple of years ago. And my plan originally was to get involved in real estate here in Texas. But I started looking at the numbers and I realized the properties actually didn't earn as much money here in Texas as they do in Massachusetts. So for me, I just kept buying more in Massachusetts. The difference, though, is in Texas, people mostly invest in single family properties because they're very cheap per square foot. But up north, it doesn't even make sense to buy single families. I own only one of them. It just because I fell into it kind of. All mine are multifamily. So I wouldn't invest in single families where I'm from.
Right. So are you talking 2, 3, 4s? Or are you talking like larger, well, mid-sized multi, 5+?
Small multis. Everything I own is 5 units or less.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, I think that brings up a good point too, that, you know, people say, you know, I can't invest in real estate in my area. And I think that the more appropriate statement there is I can't invest in a certain type of real estate in my area. Like you said,
absolutely.
Yeah, maybe single family homes don't work in one area, but they do another. Maybe multifamily work in one versus another. You just got to figure out what works in your neighborhood.
Or they just have to, you know, like delay instant gratification and you know, save a little bit more so that they've got the down payment or they can find partners and things like that. I mean, you know, there's deals to be had in all sorts of markets, inexpensive and expensive, but it's how are you going to do it, right?
Yeah, I hear that all the time for the Bay Area, right? People are like, well, I live in the Bay Area, I can't invest. And my response is always the same. What you're saying that there's no real estate investors in the Bay Area? There's nobody investing in real estate in the entire Northern California? That's amazing. Like, of course there are. It's just there's a different way to do it. You just got to figure that out.
Yeah, absolutely. The way you might read about or the way that everybody else is doing it in Dallas is not going to work for you in California or in Massachusetts. You have to adapt your style or your investment strategy to where you want to invest in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is actually one of the reasons why I love being a co-host here on the Bigger Pockets podcast. And I love listening to episodes of like this podcast because, and I'm sure a lot of you guys can identify listening to this because like you hear how it works in Texas and Massachusetts and Bay Area and, you know, Minnesota, Washington, whatever. Are you laughing at Josh that I said Massachusetts? I struggle with that word, all right?
I saw
your face. Yeah, you're like, all right? It's a weird word. Come on. It's like saying rural.
You know, it's funny. Here in Texas, almost nobody can pronounce Massachusetts. Most people call it Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. So, wait, how do you say it? How do you officially say it?
Massachusetts.
That's a weird word.
That's good enough.
But there's a term that we in New York lovingly call the people from Massachusetts that I won't say because I'm about to lose another segment of our population. But most people do not fit that terminology.
This is a good New York-Massachusetts rivalry, but you know we're people from New York love Massachusetts and people from Mass love New York. Just love each other when it comes to sports.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I love the idea because we talk about this all the time, right? I mean, you know the market where you are back home in Mass, right? You know that market. You grew up in that market. You get it. You understand it fundamentally. And so, yeah, just because that's, you know, not right near where you are, the one advantage that you go in with is market knowledge. And so we typically will say, hey, for newbies, try to stay close to home. But really the reason for that is primarily that market knowledge. It's also proximity allows you to go and swing by and see it. So let me ask you about that. Obviously, you've got a team on the ground that can be your eyes and ears. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Small team. I do have a team though.
Cool.
And how did you put together that team? Like, what does that consist of? What does that look like? Who takes care of things for you when you're not there?
So the people that I rely on the most right now, I loosely call them my property managers. They're actually tenants. They're still tenants of mine. And didn't ever intend for them to be property managers for me. It just started off as like, hey, can you replace a carpet for me? The wife does cleaning. She does cleaning stuff on the side. I'm like, can you clean this, do this turnover for me? Can you clean this apartment? And then slowly over time, just they were very capable and good at that. So I tried something else. They're good at that too. And just kind of grew over time. That's how I got them, you know. And then as far as tradespeople, plumbers, electricians, growing up in the area, I know a lot of people that I could just give a quick phone call to.
Yeah.
And they could take care of that stuff. So I developed my team kind of organically, just naturally over time, just kind of the way it worked out.
I love it.
That's great.
How many units are you up to total now over there?
Hey, really quick before you go there, Brandon, I just want to add a point because we do hear this a lot we hear about it on the forums a lot, and a lot of new investors will do it. They'll, you know, be like, oh, well, you know, the guy who lives in a unit seems like he's handy. I'll let him fix something in my property. And I just want to warn newbies, like, you know, you probably want to hire what you're doing worked out for you, but do they have insurance? Do they have, you know, are they bonded? I mean, if something happens to these tenants while they're working on your property, you're in trouble, right?
I can go into a little bit more detail for you why I hired them in the first place.
No, that's fine. I'd love to hear it. I just want to kind of give this as a general warning to new people because, you know, people are going to hear it and be like, oh, okay, well, I could find one of my tenants to fix something.
I agree with you 100%. The only reason why I did it is because in Massachusetts, I'm a licensed contractor and I was insured. I could hire him as a subcontractor and cover him under my own insurance.
Awesome.
And I only hired them at first because I was actually in a bind. The guy that I was supposed to do for something didn't show up. So I just, he just happened to mention it. So I called him. Absolutely right. If I didn't have the insurance and the other things, I probably never would have gave them a chance. So.
Yeah. And I wasn't trying to call you out. I just want people to be aware that, there's a potentiality for getting themselves in trouble.
Absolutely. It's a great tip. And plus, if they're your tenant, if the relationship ever breaks down, you're going to probably end up having to evict the tenant. So you always have to worry about
that. My lead contractor I had for probably 5 years was also my very first tenant I ever had. And he's the one that...
This is the one that burnt down the house, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, he accidentally burned down the house when we had to evict him. And so I lost a tenant, I lost my contractor, and I lost my house all in the same day. It was fantastic.
Ironically, as we talked to Eric here, that happened last year at FinCon.
It did happen last year at FinCon. Yeah. So now it's been a year since then. But anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I don't regret working with him over those years. But I mean, he was a licensed bonded contractor as well. And so I think there is value. You know, if you have a tenant going and doing work, like a random tenant, hey, can you go take care of this roof? You know, go sweep the roof off of stuff. He falls off, breaks his leg. Now you're in for, you know, some serious trouble.
Absolutely.
It happens a lot. So. It does happen, yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, just be careful out there, but there you go. All right, so how many units are you up to total now?
I'm at 26 units. I just closed on 5 units last week, actually.
Oh, congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah. So you're at 26 units, and you started 2012, so it's about 4 years. You've kind of built up a pretty nice portfolio.
Yep, that's about right. I bought my first one was in 2009, right at the end. Three units that we lived in, but I didn't buy my next property until 2012. So there's a couple year gap in there.
Cool.
Now, you mentioned earlier, like, you kind of off the cuff or whatever, something about not working for somebody else anymore. Does that mean you don't have another job? Like, this supports you financially? Like
100%.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you achieve financial freedom through rental properties, which is, I mean, the goal of most of our listeners here. Mm-hmm. And you did that just by picking up just rental properties, small multifamily properties, manage them correctly, and just kind of growing your portfolio.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was in real estate full time. I was buying property, working on some flips. I was doing some side stuff as a realtor, as a contractor, just trying to make some money, you know, related to real estate, but not just on my investments.
Right on.
You're right. So the synergies. So I'm already doing one thing in real estate. Another thing just kind of makes sense. I already know about it. So it's easy to make some money on it. And when I achieved financial independence or financial freedom is actually, I was financially free before I realized it, but I was working so full time in my business and working on the properties and stuff that I was spending all my time doing it. When we moved to Texas and suddenly had to have somebody else manage everything for us is when I realized I actually don't need to work.
You know? Yeah. So that's awesome.
Hey.
Yeah, so man. By moving is, even though we had already had the income necessary to be there, we didn't realize it until I was forced into it. Then that's when I said, we're free. We're financially free now.
That's cool. That's cool. Hey, Brandon, there's a pretty nice place to live here in Denver. You got a whole team set up in Podunk and, you know, come on out,
well,
man.
Well, the truth is, like, I've been building my business so that I can, you know, eventually if I needed to move, I could move because I got, you know, people in place and, you know, that. Yeah. I think that's important. Whether or not you plan to move or not, try to systemize your business so that you could. So I think that's fantastic.
Sure.
And I'm assuming also, yeah. Eric, you're not living like, you know, in $1 million mansion. I mean, maybe you are, but like, no. You're probably living pretty frugally. Yeah. But I mean, like the you're living, you know, responsibly, I guess is the word there, right?
Well, the nice thing about Texas is I can live with a way better standard of living here than in Massachusetts. So yeah. I moved out of a house that we owned and we moved into an apartment complex in Texas when we moved from Mass to Texas. And the rent here is pretty cheap and the amenities are amazing. So we have a great lifestyle now for a fraction of what, you know, it'll cost in Massachusetts to do that. So we live better.
Hold on, because I'm confused. You're a landlord, but you're renting?
Yeah, absolutely. Just because I love the area. That's all.
That's awesome. I was not actually going to make a smart-ass remark. I think it's great. I mean, like, yeah, you're living off the problem. I mean, you got the income off of real estate. You know, if you'd rather rent than buy, then rent out. Find the place that you want to be and do what you got
to
do.
Our dream right now, what we're aiming for is we want to travel some. So my wife's Chinese, and we're planning on heading over to China for about 6 months next year.
Nice.
And, you know, we want to travel around and be free to pick up and move and go somewhere for a few months and come back, especially while our kids are very young.
Yeah.
So, you know, owning a home and living in the home makes you a little bit more stuck to where you are. So, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, we'll probably buy another place and live in it.
Yeah.
For now, though, we want that freedom.
Cool. Makes sense. That's awesome. Hey, so, you know, 26 deals, 26 units, you know, you started with $100,000, which, you know, is a large amount of money for a lot of people. How did you get there? I mean, how did you parlay the first couple deals, you know, to the next deals and the next deals? You know, how did you accumulate and work the financial angle on the growth of your business?
Right. So what I was doing at the time, I didn't even know it, is you call it the burr strategy now, right? Then, I don't know if that term is even coined, but...
So, that's what we call it, burr.
So So after the first flip that I didn't really earn anything on, I then went and bought a 4-unit property, and which is probably the best deal I've ever made in my whole life. And this is one of the reasons why I love Massachusetts. If I could digress for a second, in the they had it listed for about $150,000, but it had four deadbeat tenants. One was a heroin addict. Like it was all the worst people you could imagine, but in an okay place, okay area, just it was mismanaged. And the landlord couldn't get them out. So they just sold it. I got it for $75,000. You know, I just came in, I evicted everybody and I turned around and making a ton of money off of it. Yeah. So in these landlord friendly states, those type of opportunities exist if you know how to deal with tenants. But anyway, so I paid cash for this property, did a little bit of work, about $10,000 or $15,000 worth of work. And it appraised out at about 180. So when I refi, I put like $30,000-$40,000 in my pocket, which then allowed me to go to my next property and continue doing that.
That is awesome. The power of the BRRRR strategy, which stands for buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. For those people who've never heard that term before, just the idea of those fixer-upper rentals. And I did a webinar on that last week, actually, here on Bigger Pockets, or was it 2 weeks ago? Something like that. Anyway, we had like, I think 5,000 people total between the live webinar and then a few people on the replay ended up watching that thing. It was just a crazy popular topic. People love that. So if you're a pro member, you can go watch the replay of that because we have the pro replay room. All the past webinars are there, biggerpockets.com/pro replay. And if you're not a pro member, sign up at biggerpockets.com/pro.
Or just go to biggerpockets.com/webinar and you can listen to any of the upcoming webinars for free, obviously.
All the webinars are live and free to come watch live every single Wednesday. So good stuff.
And for the newbies, so I had a lot of cash from my deployment, but I've done it also when I was running multiple projects. You could do that with hard money as well. So if you borrow some hard money or private money, you could do the exact same thing. So you don't need a ton of money in order to be able to do that strategy for the newbies out there.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's true. Now, the danger with hard money, of course, I mean, I've done it as well. The danger is if you get a hard money lender who's like, you know what, I'm only going to give you 6 months on this loan. You know, sometimes it's not enough time to rehab it and then try to get a refinance and you can get into some trouble. I just tell people, if you're going to use hard money, just make sure you got at least a year, you know, a loan with that. And a lot of hard money lenders will do 1 year. Some will even do two and then give yourself some room there. So cool.
With an option to extend sometimes.
Yes.
They'll extend it for you. So
yep. And I think the key really with the burst strategy, I mean, the biggest thing is finding the best deals you can. I mean, you really need to find a great deal so you have room so you can build the equity. You got to find a good, just as good of a deal as a house flipper does. You don't have to necessarily find better, but you got to find a good deal just like a house flipper is going to do it. So let's shift and then talk about that. How are you finding these deals? Are you MLS or are you?
Oh, nice transition, man.
Thank you. You like that?
So I just find deals mostly through MLS. I've had some one-off type, just other, you know, random stuff that came up, but most of it's through MLS. And I really search for stuff that's mismarketed, where the realtor puts it incorrectly into MLS. And a couple examples of that, like a single family house with the in-law apartment built onto it, listed as a multifamily instead of a single family, like those sorts of things. So that's kind of stuff I'm looking for, mismarketed. And what I really like buying is the properties that have tenant problems. And you can always tell the tenant problems when, you know, there's only one picture of the property. It's on the outside and there's none on the inside of the unit.
That is such a good tip. Like I never even thought about that before, but it's true. I look for those as well because I just kind of assume on the MLS, if there's one picture, they couldn't or didn't go inside for some reason.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that tip.
And in landlord-friendly states, the landlords probably want to get out of that property and they're willing to make a deal just to walk away from it.
Well, let me ask you about that. So are you looking at any SFR? Or are you looking at just any property that has one picture, usually the outside? That's your signal that there's a problem with the property, whether the property looks like crap and it's owner-occupied or the property's got a bad tenant.
Right. So in Massachusetts, I don't do any single family. So I've never looked.
Oh, that's right. That's right. My bad.
Only two families, two units and up. And most of the time, three units and up, because two units don't always work out there. And I mean, there's a lot of signals. So when you look at the MLS, you can see if there's information missing or incorrect, some of the other signals. So it might say we have 5 bedrooms and 1 bathroom, but it's listed as a 2 unit. So clearly they're missing a bathroom on there somewhere. So, you know, there's some mistakes in. Those mistakes pop up a lot when either they get converted from a single family to a multifamily and no updates are made. So maybe there's work that's done without permits. The listing agent can't get into the property, check anything, and they just say, screw it, put whatever comes up from the tax records.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of little subtle things that you can look for.
Nice. That's great. Great tip. Love that.
Yeah.
Are you finding things, you said mostly MLS looking for the mismarketed and the tenant problems, but you also had intonated that you had other techniques. Are you doing any kind of mailing? Are you doing any kind of driving for dollars or finding these good deals in any other way?
Now that I moved to Texas, I do have my property manager. They do send me some word of mouth stuff because they're really connected into the neighborhoods that I'm looking in. So that's popped up. One of the most interesting things I ever did, though, is I became a state-appointed receiver for a property. For anybody who doesn't know what that is, when properties get foreclosed on or not foreclosed on, they get abandoned and they fall into disrepair, the state can step in and put the property into receivership and force repairs upon the property. So I picked up one property that way. I've actually foreclosed against the bank and wiped them out of their position and took it.
Really?
Wait, you closed on, explain that.
So what happened,
by the way, for those of you listening, Eric's got a big old smile happening right now as he tells this story.
This is the best deal ever. So in receivership, at least in Massachusetts, I'm sure something similar happens in different markets, but the bank sends out foreclosure notices against these people. And this is the one single family that I own. The owners vacate the property because they know they're going to be foreclosed on. But the bank, for whatever reason, doesn't foreclose on the property, and they leave it there in their shadow inventory. So it's a property that's not foreclosed on but not occupied. And as you guys know, it only takes a couple of years before they fall into complete and utter disrepair.
Yeah.
You get one little leak in the roof and the property gets filled up with mold. So, I mean, the state steps in with the health code and says, you need to maintain this property up to the health code of our state. Either the owner does it, which won't because they left, or the bank does it, who won't do it because they don't own it yet. So they appoint a person to go do these repairs, and you get a super lien position on the property, which wipes out, it's above everything except for taxes or city taxes. But funny enough, the banks usually pay the city taxes before foreclosure. So I just wiped the bank out and took it from them, basically.
Wow. So what did that look like from a financial standpoint? What were the numbers?
Okay, so I put about $60,000 worth of work into a property, and I foreclosed on it for just the cost of the work that I put into it. And yep. It's worth about $140,000. It needed some structural work, which is one thing I specialize in. So it needed all new lolly columns, and the house needed to be jacked up a little bit in the middle. They had all rotted out. The supports, the kitchen was falling apart. Needed a whole new kitchen. The whole yard was overgrown. I had to get people in there to just like take out like weeds that became trees.
Nice.
So, I mean, it was pretty extensive.
Wow. That's cool.
That's awesome.
It's unique. I've never ever talked about doing it that way before. So
yeah,
that's cool.
Sweet.
Hey, one more thing too. You just mentioned there, just as part of your story, you said you specialize in foundation stuff or structural stuff. You said you were a general contractor licensed in Massachusetts. Did I say that right? Massachusetts.
Yep. That's right.
Good. You were a GC there. I mean, is that what you like focus on? Are you just like buying rentals or properties with problems like that? Like, how do you become a specialist in foundation issues?
That's a really good question. So I realized really early on, especially after I got my license as a GC, that foundation stuff, or not necessarily the foundation, but the supports underneath, that's really scary, but it's actually really cheap to fix. And so, but you pay a lot to fix it because you need someone who is not scared to do the work.
Yeah. So, I know that my area, a bad foundation you can drop the price of a house 50 grand if it's sloping wrong, and they're not that complicated, but I have the same problem. I can't find people to do the work because everyone's afraid of it. But I know that it's not that difficult because there are a few guys that just do it just fine. They'll do it in 2 days and make themselves 30 grand to do 2 days of work. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, I should get into that.
Absolutely. So if the house is sagging and the supports in the center are rotted out, because in Massachusetts, we have a very old inventory. A lot of houses are 100 years old plus.
Yeah.
It's not hard to jack the house up, make it pretty much level, and then toss in lolly columns, which cost under $100 each. You put 6 or 7 of those, and the house is nice and straight and will last another 100 years. So for under $1,000, you can, fix this house or this property, but yeah. You're going to save $25,000 off of the asking price for it. So. Wow.
That's amazing. Bada bing. All done. Beautiful.
Cool. All right. Well, I want to shift gears and head over to the world famous fire round here in a second. Before I do, I just want a last kind of follow-up question. So you've got the fiveplex you just closed on, right? Do you mind if we just walk through just for a second how you found it, how you financed it, and kind of what the numbers kind of look like, just so people have an idea of what you're doing nowadays?
So this is a 5-unit multifamily. It's mixed use. It's got one commercial space in the front.
Okay.
I picked it up for $132,000. It's the reason why it's so cheap and nobody would buy it. It was on the market for about 6 months, is because the previous landlord it was in the family for 3 generations, and the rents are about half of market rent, and he refuses to raise rent. So on a 5-unit plus, it's the price is based off of the cap rate and the rents you're getting and such. So it's basically worthless at those rents. And I know I'm going to double the rents, so I don't mind to purchase it even at $132,000.
Yeah.
And so it probably needs about $20,000-$30,000 worth of work to get it to the level that I want it to be. And then I think when it's done, and once I raise all the rents, it'll be worth about somewhere between 225 and 250.
That's awesome. And I'm assuming then you go refinance it at that point, put it into something long term. Is that the goal?
Right. So probably in a year from now, I'm going to do it slowly because it is occupied right now. So I'm just going to do one unit at a time over the course of the next year.
Sure.
And just raise one unit at a time, and then a year from now, I should be able to refinance to get my money out.
I love it.
Nicely done. I love it. Sounds great. Good strategy, that Burr.
Came up with that.
Yeah. It's good stuff. So,
He invented it.
Obviously. I invented it right here. I'm the guy that invented it. Pockets. Yeah, Bigger Pockets invented the Burr strategy.
No. There are no secrets. We invented nothing.
You just put a name. We label things. We're marketers. That's it right there. Right. Just yesterday, I was watching a P90X video, or not P90. It was like some like Beachbody commercial infomercial, because that's what I do when I'm bored. And so I'm watching this infomercial, and they were talking about like this thing called like, I don't know. It was some kind of workout thing, like jump stacking or whatever they called it. I don't know. And I was like, whatever they were showing was something that's been around for thousands of years. People have been doing the same thing. They put a new term on it, marketed it all over the place, and now Beachbody invented this brand new exercise technique. And I'm like, but that's what good marketers do. So burn.
When I was in college, just real quick, it's funny.
Yeah.
The guy that ran the gym, and he was kind of like my personal trainer too. And it was back when CrossFit was starting to become really popular. And he's like, you know, this guy's like 50 years old, 55 years old, the most in shape person I've ever met in my whole life. He's like, I remember when CrossFit just used to be called exercise. So
there you go.
CrossFit is another perfect example. Yeah, it's really good marketing. They know how to label things. So very cool.
Awesome.
All right, Eric, cool. Let's shift gears here and head over to the world famous fire round.
It's time for the fire round.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes to help you see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like, so you can find a home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to help you get the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets.
Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Listen up, business owners, because I've got some quick little math for you. Fewer costs equal more profit. The problem? You're spending more than ever on operations, materials, deliveries, software, and more. So why not reduce your costs and headaches with NetSuite by Oracle? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Oh, also, NetSuite lives in the cloud, which means you can reduce IT costs with no hardware required. Cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because now you've got one unified business management suite. You can improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. It makes sense that over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. So don't let rising costs sink your business growth. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/biggerpockets. netsuite.com/biggerpockets. netsuite.com/biggerpockets.
All right, let's get to these fire round questions. Of course, the fire round, for those people unaware, are questions that come directly from the Bigger Pockets forums. These are free real estate forums, the largest real estate forum online. You can go jump in and ask questions all the time. And guys like Eric are in there answering your questions. So we're going to fire a few of them at you, Eric. Number
BiggerPockets.com /forums.
Thank you, Josh.
You can get to them. Mom. There are thousands of new posts a day on the forums, and it's amazing. So let's get to that first question now, Brandon.
All right. There's a question. I really like this. We've asked this a few times on the fire round because people ask it a lot in the forums. The market seems pretty high. Should I be adjusting my strategy for a potential collapse? I think the official words they used was, should I be adjusting my strategy now because of the economic forecast? What do you think?
All right. I don't know what other people should do, but I can tell you that I am doing that. So this particular property, I probably spent 5 or 6 months before I really jumped into this. I mean, I was looking at properties for about that period of time. And normally it doesn't take me that long to find it. I wanted to find something that was about 50% under market value, because I think if there is going to be a correction of 10 or 20% in the next year or two, I don't know the numbers, but if it was 20%, I'm still positive after raising the value. So it was really hard for me to find this particular deal. And that's how I'm hedging myself for the next year or two.
Nice. Right on. Cool. And if you did know, you would obviously tell us all what's going to happen, right?
Absolutely. Yes. If I had that sort of insight, I would.
Yes. Or just short the market when it happens.
Yeah, money. Exactly.
All right.
Next question in the fire round. I have an 11-year-old water heater servicing 20 units. There are no problems currently, but I would just rather not have it go out on a Friday night or a Saturday night. So the question is, do you schedule change outs on water heaters, or do you just wait till they die?
I love this question.
That's a great question.
I do not schedule water heaters, but I do save for them just for when they do go.
Okay.
Got it.
So on that particular thing, I just, because there's been times where a water heater is supposed to last 5 years.
Yeah.
And it goes for 9 years. I would go through two water heaters in the time that I, I could save that money and put it towards other things. So it's, nice. But then again, it is 20 units. So maybe you don't want 20 angry tenants at the same time.
That's true.
Fair point. Fair point.
All right. Number three, I'm looking for a mentor to teach me how to invest. How do I find one?
How do you find a mentor? So I found a mentor. I actually have a family member who does real estate. So I started with her. And then also real estate investor meetings. I find that a lot of real estate investors are pretty open with the information they have and are very willing to teach you a lot of what they know, just by going to those sorts of meetings. And almost every city has, real estate investor meetings. So that's where I would start.
Nice. And you could find meetings like that and others at biggerpockets.com/events. That's biggerpockets.com/events. We've got tons of events put on by our local folks around the country. So last question on the fire round. Brandon gets these really short ones. I get paragraphs. So
I like to hear you read.
Yes. Well,
We should have you record the audiobook for the Ultimate Beginner's Guide to Real Estate Investing.
Oh,
this is a fantastic idea.
Are you calling me out publicly?
Is that what you're doing? Yeah, because might as well have that on Audible. I mean, it's a free book. People can download at biggerpockets.com/UBG, but why not have an Audible version of it read by Josh Dorkin?
Not a bad idea.
If you guys want Josh to do that, Tweet Josh at JR Dorkin at Twitter, at JR Dorkin, and let him know you want to hear him in his sexy voice reading the
You guys
Ouija.
Hold on while I send that tweet out real quick.
You do realize that I'm still getting knock-knock tweets from like podcast 7 or something where Brandon told people to tweet me knock-knock. And
we should start that back up again. You guys, if you guys want to tweet at JR Dorkin, just tweet him knock-knock also. That's good. All right.
And if you want to tweet Brandon Turner, just tweet Brandon at BP. It's Brandon ATBP and tell him to stop picking on me, would you?
All right. Just so Eric's not left out. Eric, what's your Twitter?
Do you know? It's at Eric J. Bolin.
All right. At nice. Eric J. Bolin.
Yes,
anyway.
Tell Eric what an awesome guy he is.
There you go.
All right, last question. I don't know what you said. I'm not listening. All right, last question. We're done. Let me finish this.
Finish it.
All right, here we go. I'm renting out the second half of the duplex I just bought to house hack. I have a great prospect, a business guy who's moving to Chicago, but he only wants it for 9 months. Do you think it's worth it to accept him and find a new tenant in 9 months, or should I keep looking for a longer-term tenant?
There's a couple of variables. So it depends on your financial situation, how bad you need the cash flow right now. So I would evaluate that first. Do I need the cash right now or no? Can I wait? So that's the first thing. And the second thing is a lot of landlords will raise the rents if you do short-term leases. So if it's 9 months, you could say, all right, you do 9 months, but it's going to go up 75 or 100 or whatever dollars. You know, so I'm going to lose a month's rent in 9 months and have to get another person.
Yep.
But I can, you know, make up some of that or all of that by just going ahead and renting it to you at a higher rate.
There you go. There you go. All right. That wraps up our fire round questions. And of course, if you have more questions for guys like Eric, jump into the forums, biggerpockets.com/forums. So now let's finish this thing up with the world famous.
Famous four.
All right. These four questions are the same four questions we've been asking for almost 200 shows. And we're going to throw them at you now, Eric. So number one, what is your favorite real estate related book?
All right. Well, I know everybody says it, but it's Rich Dad Poor Dad. But cool. So moving on, that book literally changed my life. But for a real estate book, I have this one. I've had it since 2009. It's called The Successful Landlord.
Who's that by? It's called something else. There's a whole like line crossed out there, and it says something else there. On I won't say it over the air.
That's right. So it's not a book that you would buy. It's Massachusetts only, but it goes through all the landlord laws in this state. And, you know, I did cross out the word successful and I changed it with something because I realized at the beginning that in order to be successful as a landlord, I had to be an a-hole. So.
All right.
Nice.
You kind of do. You kind of do.
There you go. There you go.
I believe that everybody should get their state or municipality specific book if it exists and know it inside and out.
Love that. Love that tip.
Good job. All right.
All right. Well, speaking of, you know,
favorite real estate books, why don't we talk about our favorite business books?
Absolutely. So my favorite business book, I have that right here too, The Psychology of Selling by Brian Tracy.
I do love that book. That is a fantastic book.
So I only remember one thing in the whole book, and that sticks with me.
What's
and
that?
He said in it that a person only earns plus or minus 10% of what they think they're worth.
I love that. That was one of the most transformational things in that entire book.
Why don't you repeat that so everybody can hear it?
Absolutely. So what he said is that a person only earns plus or minus 10% of what they think they're worth.
Yeah.
There you go.
That when I read that, that changed my life. But then he goes on further. There's one more thing he adds on to that. He says, and what you think you're worth is typically what your father made when you grew up. And that like blew my mind because I realized that is what I thought I was worth. My dad made a certain amount growing up. That's the benchmark that I set for myself. And nice. Yeah, mind blown when I read that.
But, that is a great quote. Yeah.
Psychologist. Awesome.
If you want to earn more, you got to feel like you're worth more.
Yep.
And so you got to change your own mindset first.
Yeah.
Right. So true. It is not true what they say about you.
It's not. All right.
All right. Next question. What do you do for fun, Eric?
The thing that I like to do the most is traveling. I touched upon it a little bit. I've been a lot of places in the world, and that's, you know, real estate opens up that. I get to travel 2-3 times a year, and I usually go for 3 or 4 weeks at a time. So that's what I love to do.
That's awesome.
Cool. Very good. Very good. Cool.
All right. My last question of the day. Eric, what do you believe sets apart successful real estate investors from all those who give up, fail, or never get started?
I think planning sets the successful or those who start from those who don't for a couple of reasons. Because a lot of people don't get started in real estate because they're afraid. They're afraid to lose money. They're afraid that they don't know what they're doing. And that's where our plan comes in. So if you have a solid plan walking into it, if you know what the risks are, you know what the dangers are, but if you have a plan to mitigate those risks and mitigate those dangers, then you can overcome that fear and get started. The people who fail, aside from major market corrections and changes like that, planning will help you make sure that you have enough money, cash reserves, you know, you're doing the maintenance as necessary and such to not fail and so that you can continue to succeed.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome. Very good. Very good. All right, Eric, before we let you go, man, where can people find out more about you?
Yeah, so you can find more about me on my website, ericbowlin.com, B-O-W-L-I-N, ericbowlin.com. I have my own blog there and I talk about real estate and financial independence.
Cool. Awesome. And you also, you do blog in the Bigger Pockets blog occasionally. Is that correct?
Yes, I am now a contributor on the Bigger Pockets blog. Just put my first article out this month, actually.
And that was the one on contractors, right?
That's right. With four reasons why you can't find a good contractor.
Yeah, fantastic.
And people loved that article. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Cool. Well, we'll link to that in the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show198. And you can also jump in there on the comments, ask Eric questions, talk to him there, see the summary of the show, including the YouTube video will be there as well.
Perfect. All right, Eric. Well, listen, man, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really do appreciate it. Lots of luck to you as you continue to go forward. And congrats on all the success you've had so far.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this was fun. See you around.
Yep. Take care, man.
Bye.
All right, guys, that was Eric Bowlin. Big thanks again to Eric. That was great, man. I love it.
Yeah, I really like Eric a lot. I like his story. I like the fact that he's out there like collecting units, getting that passive income coming through enough to quit his job, travel the world. Yep. I do like his philosophy quite a bit on, you know, it's not, you don't have to buy a house. In fact, just now during this podcast recording, a friend of mine texted me and said, hey, I want to buy a house. He lives in Southern California. I said, how do I buy a house down here in Southern California? You have any tips for me? And like my tip back to him is just rent a place, go buy something elsewhere. If you really want to buy something, there's nothing wrong with, I mean, there's some good ways to do it in a low, a high market like that. But, I think Eric's got a very good philosophy there, you know?
I agree.
Do what you got to do to enjoy your life.
I just love these stories. I mean, the podcast is so much fun because we just hear these different pathways that everyone takes. And I think that is one of the things that makes Bigger Pockets so special, at least for me, is, you know, all these kind of gurus and trainers and all these guys who know everything. You're like, here's my method. Here's what you got to do. And, you know, what we hear from every single person that we talk to is, they've got their own path. They've got their own method. They've got their own strategy, and they create what works for them. What works for them isn't necessarily going to work for me or for you. Yep. And so, you know, that's why we harp on this so much is you've got to figure out what works for you. You've got to find the path that works for you, where you are in your age, in your job, in your financial situation, you name it. And, you know, you may not know the right path right away, but you got to get out there and try. You know, and that's the big difference that is between the guy who's actually doing it and the guy who's not is the guy who's doing it took that chance. He did it, right? He's like, I'm going to take a leap of faith and this is the path I'm going to take on that first unit and go for it. I mean, it's a leap of faith. It really is.
Yeah, I totally agree. But it's nice to hear stories of guys that are doing it. So
yeah, cool. For sure. Cool, man. Well, listen, this has been fun. Hopefully, I will not be recording out of my house again. Hopefully. For those of you watching the video, you saw me disappearing a few times. I got people ringing the doorbell. I got dogs barking. I got kids screaming. I got all sorts of stuff happening. I love recording at the office. It's great. It's great. Cool, man. Well, good times. And looking forward to it, man. We're down to the final two. Well, not the final two, but we're almost at 200. So we're getting there.
And we got a cool show planned for number 200, you guys. So stick around for that. And if it's out already, go listen to it right after this episode comes out. Go listen to it. We're going to have some fun on it. So cool.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening to the podcast. Definitely jump on biggerpockets.com. Create your free account today. And we will see you next time. With that, I'm your host, Josh Dorkin, signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
You got 5 minutes, man. Tell them to shut up.
I know. Well, I have the dog barking. I have... Brooklyn, shut up! That would be my dog. That is my dog in the closet, like going crazy while we're trying to record. And yeah, I'm like an abusive dad, apparently.
Yeah.
There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month. 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value. 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, F-O-U-R, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.